Sarah Jamma, you are named. You must leave the chamber. The member is currently not eligible to be recognized in the House pursuant to the order of the House adopted October 23rd, 2023. As a result of being named, the member for the remainder of the day is ineligible to vote on matters before the Assembly, attend and participate in any committee proceedings, use the media studio, and table notices of motion, written questions, and petitions.
That is a speaker of the House talking to Sarah Jamma, who's defying the rules of removing her cafea at Queen's Park. And I think in doing so, proving that this is really about politics, right? Because Jamma says the House Speaker's ban on this scarf is racist and she's going to continue wearing it, which technically means she cannot be in chambers. And that's not because it's racist. It's because no one is allowed to wear anything political or sending any kind of symbol, including a hockey shirt, including bring the hostages home. That wouldn't be allowed anything if you're sending a message, right? That's just the rules. So it's not that she's an outlier. You can't wear these things, but she's going to. And so will she be allowed in on Monday? I guess we're going to find out. But nonetheless, here we are in this fight over something that we really shouldn't be in a fight over, something that has been really seen as a fixture, certainly in the last 7 months of these demonstrations we've seen around the world and here in Toronto. But here we are with the cause of the day, with, I think, the obvious ignored, and that is, and as my next guest, you know, explains, I mean, this is a scarf that once upon a time was used certainly by the Arabs to shield them from the sun and the sand, but very much came to the world's attention when one of the earliest and most notorious architects of terror, Yasser Arafat, made it part of his signature look. It was known as the Arafat scarf. So to suggest that it's not political or a symbol sending a message is naive. Let me bring in Rahim Mohammed, a political columnist for the National Post, The Lion, and Calgary Herald, who writes about this. Great to have you on this.
Great to be here, Alex.
So this has been turned into just a political football all the way around. We've got, you know, all these politicians saying, look, we've got to let this go. It's not a big deal. But, all you know, it shouldn't be a big deal, right? But don't wear it, period, or anything else. But I'm not sure why this has become such a fight, certainly for the opposition. But this is this is what they're doubling down on.
Yeah, and I would add it to your intro, which I think was very well stated, that you have a number of different kefia designs.
Right.
The design the activist Jamma wearing is the Palestinian variant that has a black and white fishnet pattern that is was meant to signify the connection of Palestine to the Mediterranean Sea. So it is a specific, it's always had a political meaning. And you look at people like Sarah Jamma, I believe she's of Somali extraction. So I don't know if there's a Somali kafia, but, you know, she is wearing a Palestinian kafia, which I believe, you know, per the logic of people like her, is cultural appropriation, if it is indeed a culturally significant garment. So, you know, to suggest that, you know, she's not with that garment, with its connection to people like Yasser Arafat, and I think with its connection more recently to the types of anti-Israel protests we're seeing in places like Ottawa and places like Columbia University, I think it's absolutely it's incredulous to suggest that this is anything other than using a fashion accessory to make a political statement, which is expressly against the rules of the Ontario legislature.
Right. And so for Premier Ford and the rest, it's political because we've got this by-election going on in Milton. There's a heavy Muslim presence. They don't want to rock the boat, and therefore they've parked any kind of moral clarity about this. But it just would have been so simple, or it should be so simple to say, look, we have rules. This is no different than anything else. And I point to the example when we had that NDP motion being voted on where you had a number of NDP MPs wearing their kafia, but yet you had a young woman whose family members abducted by Hamas, and she was not allowed to wear a free the hostages or bring them home shirt because, again, it had a message on it. So there's no consistency here.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not making any sort of normative value judgment as to whether sort of the pro-Palestinian message, I think conveyed by that, again, that specific kafia with that specific patterning and, you know, bring them home a T-shirt. I think both of them, whether you agree with the message or don't agree with the message, clearly send a political message, which is against the rules, of course, of the legislature.
So where does this go? Because you've got lots of people speaking out, you know, on different, wherever your politics lie, I guess, is how you're going to look at it. They look at this as a defining moment, as a moment of shame, as a moment of, you know, you've got that picture of the House Speaker talking to Ms. Jama, and, you know, she is in a wheelchair, so it looks like he's, you know, looking down on her when he's actually just trying to bow so he can talk to her. She's not actually supposed to be in the chamber, but people are looking at this, Mohammed, as a defining moment, a moment of shame in this country. And how do you see it?
Yeah, so I think the speaker exercised an admirable level of restraint in that, you know, he was, I think, within his rights to have her hauled out by the legislature staff. I'm glad he chose not to. I think this was handled quite well and quite, you know, I think given the parameters quite discreetly. And I think, you know, I would imagine Sarah Jama is going to keep showing up in her keffiyeh because that's pretty much her brand at this point. And I think she should be dealt with in the same way. And I think that, you know, she can decide where to go with from there. But I think we've seen an enforcement of the policy. I'll agree with you. The optics of that photo weren't great, but I think we've seen an enforcement of the policy that was a logical enforcement, and I think the speaker should stand his ground. And I hope he does.
Well, I hope he does too, because then where does it stop, right? Like, where does it stop? And I don't put it in the same category as the poppy, because frankly, if we didn't have, you know, our men and women go to war, we wouldn't have the right to wear a keffiyeh anywhere, right? Like, the freedoms we have today are because of what our men and women did in through the great wars. So I don't put that in the same category, and I also don't put it in a cultural or even religious category because it's not the same. But then on the other side of this, you know, how are Muslims looking at this? Because it's made, I think, or presented, Raheem, that that this is an offense to all Muslims. You know, I read your article on Amira El-Gawabi, you know, this Islamophobia czar who has been speaking since October 7th. You know, she's using this fight and she's fueling the fire, I think, on this, and needlessly and I think irresponsibly.
Yeah, and I would say not all, obviously, Canadian Muslims are a monolith. So you look at, for instance, members of the Iranian community. They've said similar things about the headscarf. You know, you have... Yeah. Non-Muslim women like Kathleen Wynne, you know, wearing headscarves in legislative chambers or in mosques. And, you know, Iranian Canadians have said quite clearly that, hey, you know, women in the streets of Iran are, you know, risking violence, risking harassment by taking off their hijabs. So why are you, you know, sort of conforming to this this custom here in Canada? So I think I would imagine you have probably more diversity, more of a diversity of opinion among Canadian Muslims on this issue than you might think. But again, like you said, I mean, the big the elephant in the room is the by-election in Milton that's coming up in just a few weeks now, just a few days, actually.
Yeah.
So I think that is obviously what's sucking up the oxygen at this point.
It always comes down to politics, right? Always to politics. But the comment, you wrote a piece the day before on the Islamophobia czar, Amira El-Gawabi. Yeah. You know, she gets a letter of presence. She was appointed by the Trudeau government.
Yeah.
But you aren't a fan. I mean, you see her as fueling a lot of the hatred that we see under the guise that she is fighting Islamophobia.
Yeah, and I think quite clearly, quite demonstrably, she's been spreading quite a bit of misinformation. She's misrepresented the increases in Islamophobic incidents versus anti-Semitic incidents. Right now, you're seeing anti-Semitic incidents across the board vastly outpace the number of incidents targeting Muslim Canadians, and she's misrepresented the growth of both of those. You'll notice even when she's condemning some sort of act of anti-Semitism, she'll always shoehorn the term Islamophobia in there. But I think she really crossed a line after the protests in Ottawa, which I think were clearly and overtly anti-Semitic. I don't think there's any other interpretation of a phrase like long live October the 7th or October the 7th shows we're almost free. So for her to say that those were the words and actions of a few individual protesters, when the protesters were holding loudspeakers and directing chants, That to me is a clear misrepresentation. It's gaslighting Jewish Canadians. And I think the fact that she still has a job shows just how unserious this government is when it comes to combating anti-Semitism.
Yeah, it certainly fuels a lot of division. We'll talk again. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Thank you. That's Rahim Mohammed. You can read him in the National Post, also on The Line and Calgary Herald, but he has written two terrific pieces, giving you a different perspective, because, again, Muslim voices are not monolith.